Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello again, everybody. We begin this hour with a call-in around a simple question. Do you think trials should be televised? And do you think differently about something like the George Zimmerman trial and the proceedings of the United States Supreme Court? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we ask because here in the office, we have a bank of televisions, one or two of them often turn to the cable news channels. And over the last week, CNN and others have dipped into the George Zimmerman trial quite a lot as prosecutors try to prove that he killed Trayvon Martin out of malice and out of, you know, anything that would qualify as a legal definition of second-degree murder. Now the defense is going. All last week, whenever we wanted, we could watch the arguments against Zimmerman and all the twists and turns of the testimony play out in real time and then have all kinds of talking heads dissect them. But the week before last, when all eyes were on the Supreme Court with all these decisions of huge, momentous implications, not that the Trayvon Martin trial, George Zimmerman trial doesn't have implications, but with the Supreme Court and those huge implications, we had to wait for an intern to run out of their building with physical paper to get an idea of what was going on inside the courtroom. Only hours later did we get even audio and drawings, but neither the hearings nor the opinions play out live for all to see. Neither do the arguments. So cameras at the Zimmerman trial, but none at the Supreme Court, and incidentally none at WikiLeaks leaker Bradley Manning's court-martial also taking place. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for your thoughts about cameras in the courtroom. Is it good for democracy to see trials in real time? Is it good for individual justice in cases like the one going on in Sanford, Florida? Is it different for a criminal trial than at the Supreme Court, in your opinion? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And while your calls are coming in, let's talk with Nancy Martyr, professor of law and director of the Jury Center at IIT Chicago Kent College of Law. She's written a history of the debate over cameras and argued against cameras at the Supreme Court in a recent op-ed in USA Today. Professor Martyr, thanks for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. I'm glad to be doing this.
Give us a little context. Why are there cameras at the George Zimmerman trial?
Well, it's up to the states to decide whether they want to have cameras in their courts. And all 50 states have decided on some cameras in some of their courts, but it's up to the states to decide for themselves.
And even in a state where cameras are allowed in the courtroom, can a judge decide to block them for reasons pertaining to an individual case?
Usually the judge can. Of course, again, states have their own rules, their own statutes, but oftentimes the judge has discretion, especially because the judge always has the obligation of making sure that there'll be a fair trial.
When have judges used that discretion, if you've looked into it, in states that do have cameras in the courtroom to say, not in this case?
Well, for example, after the first Menendez brothers trials, where...
Boy, there's a memory I was glad to have forgotten about.
Yeah, it took place in California, and at least one of the trials ended up requiring a second trial. And the second time around, the judge decided no cameras for that second go-round.
I asked law professor Patricia Williams from Columbia University last week whether she thinks it's a good thing that there are cameras at the Zimmerman trial, and here's some of her response.
I do think it's a good thing that it's on trial in real time. I don't feel that about every trial. I think actually this is one that people need to sit with and watch in its entirety. I'm very suspect, however, of the way in which some television stations have been cutting it up, reenacting, using it as some sort of fictive, or reassembling it as a kind of fictive narrative arc that has nothing to do with what's actually going on in the trial.
Professor Williams last week, and I wonder what your reaction to that last part is, Professor Martis. She's almost saying that if you're going to use the live feed, then you have an obligation to use it in its entirety. Otherwise, with the likelihood of bad editing, you're undercutting the very goal of having unfiltered access.
I do worry about that as well. I think if you were going to have cameras, it should be gavel to gavel. But I worry about cameras in every trial court proceeding because I worry about how they affect the witness, the jurors, the defendant, all of the judge and the lawyers, all of the participants in the trial.
And I have a clip here of Justice Antonin Scalia, who made quite a similar argument against cameras at the Supreme Court. So here he is on C-SPAN.
We're usually dealing with the Internal Revenue Code, with ERISA, with patent law, with all sorts of dull stuff that only a lawyer could understand and perhaps get interested in. If the American people saw all of that, they would be educated, but they wouldn't see all of that.
But we get
your outfit would carry it all.
But we get
to be sure. But what most of the American people would see would be 30-second, 15-second takeouts from our argument, and those takeouts would not be characteristic of what we do. They would be uncharacteristic.
Yeah, now what we see is an article in a newspaper that's out of context with what you say is.
That's fine, but it's people read that and they say, well, it's an article in a newspaper, and the guy may be lying or he may be misinformed. But somehow when you see it live, an excerpt pulled out of an entire, when you see it live, it has a much greater impact.
Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia with Brian Lamb on C-SPAN. And I don't know, maybe because I work in media and journalism, I react badly to that, thinking that the media is so irresponsible that you don't let that aspect of democracy run its course. Don't let a Supreme Court case be recorded because CBS News or Fox News or whoever it is might edit it in a way that misrepresents or distorts accidentally or on purpose. But of course, we have that in every other realm of life. And we have all this conversation around those edits and we have debates. And I don't know why a Supreme Court argument should be exempt. But do you tend to agree with him?
I do, though, for somewhat different reasons. I mean, I worry about cameras in the Supreme Court as well as in the trial court, though I have greater worries in the trial court than the Supreme Court. In the Supreme Court, I do worry that it would change the behavior of justices and lawyers. And I do think that oral argument is an important time for the justices to get answers to the questions that they still have about a case. And they shouldn't be thinking about how their tie is or how their collar is. They should be focusing on the argument. I do agree that we want argument. We want courtrooms to be as open, as transparent as possible. And I think there are a lot of things the Supreme Court and every court can do to ensure that, such as making available posting an audio or a written transcript of the proceedings. But I stop short with the image, because with the image, we tend to focus on the image and not on the substance of the argument.
Listeners, we'll take your calls now on what you think about cameras in the U.S. Supreme Court, or in the very different circumstances of trials of individuals, as in the George Zimmerman trial right now. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And let's start with Norma in Hempstead. Norma, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I really don't like the idea of seeing a private family put on the stand and for the whole world to see their pain and what they have been through and so on. I don't think they asked for that, and it really should be left up to the families whether they agree to be on camera or not.
Are you more concerned about the families of the accused or the families of...
I think of both, because when someone commits a crime, the family is also in pain. You know, you can't say that both families aren't in pain. So to have it on TV, you know, have the world see it, these are private people who all of a sudden they're thrown into the public and to the public eye, and they, I don't think they really asked for this. And to them, to me, I think it's so unfair to them. So I think it should be left to the individuals whether they want to be on camera or not. It shouldn't be decided, no, we're going to have them on camera. To me, I think it's some kind of cruelty in that sense. As far as the Supreme Court or anybody who is already a public figure and everyone knows who they are, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter if they're on TV or not. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to affect them in the same way right. that it would a private family, and right. we should have that kind of respect.
Norma, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. John at Waterside Plaza, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi. I'm in favor of cameras. My copy of the Constitution says trials shall be open. It does not say open for those who can take a week off from work and afford, you know, and win the lottery to get a seat. If you want to change the Constitution, change it. In the meantime, we have a right to see these trials.
John, thank you very much. On that last point, Professor Martyr, about playing to the camera, some people say, well, you know, lawyers will play to the camera. And I don't know if this is different in the policy cases like the Supreme Court, constitutional cases, or individual criminal trials or civil trials. But lawyers are already playing to the jury. As an audience. So do you think it's different to be playing to the television cameras than playing to the jurors?
I do. I think courtrooms are public, and they're filled with jurors and members of the press and members of the public. So in that sense, going to the last caller's point, they are open and available to the public. But I think there's a greater sense of public here when they reach millions and millions of people. And when they can end up, then the images end up on the web and they end up there forever. There's something about public and open at the time to an audience that's there versus never being able to escape the public. So I think we meet our obligation as long as the court to the Constitution, as long as the courtrooms are open and available to the public and the press. And I realize that doesn't include everybody in the world, but it does include a representative sampling.
Jim in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Good morning. It's great to hear this conversation. My personal point is, I watched the OJ trial for roughly 2 years. 2 years. Well, it seemed like 2 years. It was really 2 or 3 weeks, and I couldn't take it anymore. It just seemed like incompetent prosecutors versus, competent and, highly qualified defense attorneys. And this seems the same way. I've seen a total of like 7 or 8 minutes of this entire process, and I just feel for both families, but more for Trayvon Martin's family, because it just seems that these guys are incompetent attorneys. I would love to see, because it's good TV, I would love to see a Supreme Court where you have two highly qualified lawyers, and I'm not saying these lawyers aren't qualified that are presenting the Trayvon Martin case, but I just think it would be more fascinating as far as the sides of two arguments, as your guest has said, and I think that would be really interesting as opposed to bad television, so to speak.
Jim, do you think, though, that you learned something important if your perception was that in both the OJ trial and the Zimmerman trial were actually racial sympathies, if you're going to measure it that way, would tend to be flipped, the prosecution in one case, the defense in the other case. And if you've learned by this that you think prosecutors are incompetent compared to defense attorneys, maybe you learned something important for a person in our democracy to know.
Well, this is true. I mean, I teach U.S. government for the New York public school system.
Uh-huh.
And we try to bring out, my main focus is on the Bill of Rights. And these you have to know, and since a lot of these kids don't understand the rules and regulations of our country, that I try to bring this up. And I also taught at Rikers for 3 years. So, I mean, yeah. That's what I worked uh-huh. on. That's what I try to work. It is. You can see, like, people who are poor don't get the same advantage as people who are rich because they can afford a higher-priced attorney who has more, has the funds to go out and do the research to get the
right.
information.
So really then the tables would be turned in a lot of those cases where the prosecutor would be the more competent one, and maybe you have, if not an incompetent individual, then a lesser prepared individual for the time that they had to devote to the case.
I have to agree with you on that. Yeah, absolutely.
Jim,
yeah.
I'm gonna leave it there, and I appreciate your call and your various thoughts. Professor Martyr, any reaction to there? He raised some interesting things, including the pattern that he noticed of seeing relatively incompetent prosecutors compared to defense attorneys in the high-profile cases of O.J. and Zimmerman.
Well, again, I guess I would be reluctant to draw patterns from basically outlier cases.
Right.
And as to his other point that he would find it really interesting to watch the oral argument at the Supreme Court, I agree that it is, but there are lots of ways of doing that in addition to going and watching the oral argument. C-SPAN carries the oral argument. I admit not with the live, but the argument itself with photos. And so there's a way of listening to the argument, and it's available online as well.
Yeah, that now that they release audio, that's a good thing for people to know about. I did hear an argument last week that during a trial, a regular trial of an individual, you have two versions of the truth being tested out. And in the end, one is judged to be accurate and the other to not be. So why does the public have a right to hear an argument that is ultimately deemed to be untrue? And could it potentially be seen as defamation to have those accusations go out unfiltered? As a law professor, do you think that defamation is a risk?
Sorry, there was a beeping on my phone during part of your question, but I got the part about the trial is two versions of the truth.
One of which will be deemed by a jury to be untrue, but you have all this untrue information and argument, therefore, going out about one person or the other. And so could that be deemed to be defamation, or is that a reason to cringe about trials being televised?
No, I don't really think you have an issue with defamation. I mean, I think you have, in a criminal case, you have the prosecution only having to prove its case. And either it proves it to the level of beyond a reasonable doubt or not. The defendant doesn't have to offer anything at all. So it's always a question of whether the prosecutor has met its burden. If you're talking about a civil trial, then you do have two versions of the truth. But again, I think that is the job of the jury to decide which version it finds to be closer to the truth. And so I'm not sure that defamation really enters in here. In most cases that go to trial, because there are very few jury trials or any trials, these are very close versions. It's hard to figure out which one is to be believed. So these are the hard cases that are decided by jury.
Well, we'll conclude with two quick comments from listeners who are writing to us. Dan on our Facebook page says, we wouldn't want to eliminate the courtroom sketch artist. It's hard enough trying to find work as an illustrator. So that's one argument against cameras in the courtroom. And Akinyele, also on our Facebook page, writes, where was the camera in the secret FISA courtroom? That would really be helpful. So we'll give Akinyele the last word on that.
I really agree with that second point.
And we thank Nancy Martyr, M-A-R-D-E-R, Professor of Law and Director of the Jury Center at IIT, Chicago Kent College of Law. She's written a history of the debate over cameras and argued against cameras at the Supreme Court in a recent op-ed in USA Today. Thank you very much. Will you, by the way, despite your reluctance, will you be glued to the Zimmerman trial anyway?
I will not. I don't have a TV.
Ah, how about that? A purist. keep your radio on.
I will.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, we have a conversation on the relationship between African and Caribbean immigrants and African Americans. Fordham University professor Christina Greer has written a book called Black Ethnics, Race, Immigration, and the Pursuit of the American Dream. We'll take calls both from immigrants and native-born blacks on your different conceptions of the American dream as it relates to her theories in the book, which we will hear. So stay with us. This should be a fascinating conversation. Stay tuned.